And will always, to all eternity, fluctuate. Okay? And what I want to get round to, I've got a sort of very comprehensive handout for you. What I want to get onto is that the purpose of fluctuating states, both here and in eternity, is not to represent too much the kind of state that we are in, but is actually there so that we keep on gaining, adding, accumulating, re-realizing, coming back, and reinforcing everything. That's the whole point of fluctuating states. Okay? I hope you get that point, because that's a key point of what I'm going to try and get across to you. And it's mirrored, mapped out, and shown in Swedenborg again and again and again and again. However, our experience here is generally, I feel lousy. What's the matter with me? I feel awful, you know? What happened? Or I feel great. I feel energized. Why? And what we're doing, if we're not careful, is actually mixing up changing circumstances and moods with the passage of life as it ebbs and flows, with the greater divine purpose of taking us into fluctuation for a deliberate purpose to keep on bringing us back again. And that's the point. If we're not away or less or whatever it is, we will not have that wonderful experience of return back into it. Okay? Alright, I've emphasized that at the start because that is the key point. Do not confuse, as we so often do, fairly ordinary everyday life ups and downs with spiritual fluctuations. And I want to give you one example before I give you a number of something else in a moment. And that is, I want you to think about the wedding at Cana, where at the end of turning the water into wine, the governor of the feast says, normally you serve the best wine first, and then the poor wine, brackets, when everybody doesn't know the difference, but you have saved the best wine until now. You have saved the best wine until now. Now, in terms of eternity, today we've already realized that now is an eternal concept. So really, once you take that comment from the governor of the feast is, you keep on discovering and rediscovering the change and the return. You have saved the best wine until now. And now. No. And now. No. Now. Oh, yes. You see? And that's the whole point of the divine's relationship with us. To make it fuller, better, richer, bigger. All the time. Forever and ever. When I was at college, we did a course on the Synoptic Gospels, which actually changed me utterly. It actually brought God from something outside of me to something within me. Okay? It became a personal relationship, personal experience. I now do not need to look out away from me for God. I find God in the dynamic within. And one of the things that we did was to go through the gospel and notice acutely the pattern of the sine wave in the gospel. Some of you will be familiar with this, but it's actually staggering. Staggering. Where, and you can do it either way. You can do it as an up leading to a decline, or you can do it from a decline leading to a return and a comeback. Because they're in endless fluctuation. Okay? So, in the Gospels, I'm going to rattle some off. I haven't got this as a handout, but you read any of the Gospels through and just colour code an upstate and a downstate. But note what happens at the end of the Gospel. Okay? Here we go. Sine wave. Press, trough, press, trough, progressively. Not repetition, progressively. Jesus is baptized, and then immediately, he goes into the wilderness and he's tempted. Gives the Sermon on the Mount, mountaintop experience, and comes down. When he had come down from the mountain, there's a string of sick people. And he deals with them, 4, 5, 6, one after another. Peak experience, energy of dealing with the sick, the lame, the fevered, and so on. He calls the 12, and immediately the Pharisees attack him twice. Not connected with calling the 12, but immediately afterwards they start their accusations. The kingdom parables, parable of the sower, the wheat and the tares, pearl of great price, and so on. Immediately after that, he goes into his own city and they don't know who he is, and how dare you? Aren't you just Mary and Joseph's son? And aren't your brothers and sisters here with us? Who do you think you are? Jesus and Peter walk on the sea. Jesus catches Peter and says, you didn't have enough faith. The Pharisees then condemn the disciples. Jesus saved a disciple. The Pharisees condemn his disciples. 5,000 are fed, and the Pharisees say, we want a sign from heaven. And in John it says, I am the bread of life which comes down from heaven and gives life to the world. The Pharisees say, show us a sign from heaven. Transfiguration. Jesus alters in every way. Glows. Oh, this one out, sorry. Peter's confession. Who do men say I am? You are the Christ, the Son of the living God. And immediately, Jesus predicts for the first time he will be suffering and killed by men. He goes up a mountain, he's transfigured, he comes down and he gives the second prediction, I will suffer and be put to death and will rise again on the third day. Great multitude are healed. The Pharisees question him. And then you get a beautiful addition of that, in my opinion. Jesus suddenly talks about eunuchs. Eunuchs. Some are born eunuchs. Some have eunuchery thrust upon them, sort of thing. Okay? Some are made eunuchs. And straight after the eunuchs, which of course is a downstate, Jesus says, unless you become like little children, the product, the offspring, which a eunuch can't have, you cannot enter the kingdom of God. Triumphal entry, casts tables and curses the barren fig tree out of season for having figs. She comes in and worships him with an alabaster vase full of oil. And after that, Judas agrees to betray Jesus for 30 pieces of silver. So on and so on and so on, you see. It's straight after that the opposite comes along. But at the end, you have Jesus arrested. The Last Supper immediately passes on into Gethsemane and finding the disciples asleep, and so on. Jesus is arrested. Pilate says, "Are you the Christ, the Son of God?" And they take him away and they spit on him and scourge him, and Peter denies he even knows him. So, straight up. Jesus is silent, then he's crucified, and then you get the difference. After the crucifixion, Jesus rises from the dead and ascends into heaven. Okay? That's the pattern. That's the gospel pattern. So, I don't want to draw pictures on the board, but if we think about that in terms of our own experience, real experience of how you can have a profound insight or a feeling of this means more to me than, you know, anything else, whatever it comes as, you can bet your bottom dollar that very soon after that pinnacle experience, something will come along and test you as to whether it is true for you or not. And that is the sort of pattern of how it has to be. Otherwise, we're flatlining, we're ascending all the time, which is extremely ego-driven, okay? And we are not growing in our relationship of in God and returning again and again and again to God. So it's a very, very interesting pattern, sign that. And on a practical way of looking at it, by David, on a practical way of looking at it, and it's almost therapy, this. You know, we're in a trough and we don't know why, what caused it, what's going on. And if you're feeling in a trough, you sort of feel you're going to be there from now on. But if you step out of yourself, you say, I've been in a trough before and I was brought back up out of that. So I can expect to have the same again. So we shouldn't feel trapped by troughs. We should actually feel, well, ideally we should feel that they're beneficial and purposeful. But we can feel in a sort of time and state way that we're not going to be there forever. And conversely, when we're in a high state, we can remind ourselves that this too shall pass. This too shall pass. You know, it will. And we will come down into whatever the reality is next, you see. So I find that the gospel pattern and the life connection with this, I find this actually very helpful. I think it's very real. Now, what I want to do is give you the handout, and we'll go through some of it, because you can read, you can look at stuff yourself. What we've got here is the first page is a comparison of possible thoughts, attitudes, and feelings about what I would call external ups and downs, and perhaps more usefully, contrast with internal fluctuations and what their purpose is and how we can introduce positive responses towards having those, because these will continue on as the passages I've chosen will remind us, these will continue on with us forever, because it is good for us to lose it. Okay? Drop the whole concept of arrival and I've got it. For that moment, you certainly have. But drop the permanence factor of it, because it doesn't work that way, much as you might like it to. Okay? So if you can pass these around, that'd be great.
Also,
yeah, comment.
You the angels have it as well. They're obscure, and then they're in
we'll come into all that. We'll come into all that. It's as true for the angels as it is for us. There's a whole chapter which isn't in here, a whole chapter in Heaven and Hell on changes of state with the angels or with the angelic. Okay? Okay, first page, zip through it. External changes in the top half, internal changes in the bottom half. I'm going to read it. External changes. Don't forget that Swedenborg has a word, natural. He uses that. This is whatever we're talking about, glossary terms and knowing what they mean. Natural is great, but sometimes natural is in comparison with spiritual. So a natural approach to change is being in a real state. Except you aren't in a real state, you're in a very unreal state. Okay? I'm in a real state, thrown by events. Thrown by events, not in control. Thrown by them. You're at their mercy. Affected by changing circumstances and moods, unable to see reason or cause, unable to detect any purposeful outcome to such changes. Now that's the fluctuation. If you turn that into a line of stability or a flat line, plateau, why does an external person experience a plateau or flat line? The aim is simply, in this way, simply to cope. When turmoil ends, life reverts to what it always was. Okay? You need to be in full personal control and stop giving the game away, manage yourself, keep it quiet, and stay perfectly normal. Concentrate on the known, and you depend on yourself. That's all external activity. By contrast, on the internal, an internal series of changes of insight and affection, awareness of the pattern of personal change, identification of a lower state as an opportunity for choice and growth, identification of a higher state as a privilege, a state of grace, some awareness of change caused by presence of various types of spirits, we're told, general acceptance of such changes as necessary and under providence. Okay? That explains true thinking, why we go through these fluctuations, which are not, I'm in a real state fluctuations. Now I feel the Lord, now I feel Him less. Now I understand, now I'm confused about certain things. Less, more, so on. When it comes to the internal constant, which I found quite interesting, the aim is to return to the divine, which brings us back, strengthening realization that one's state has not, in fact, changed. Increasing sense of trust and the remembrance that as the divine has brought you back in previous experiences, so you will return again. A knowledge that a high is not to finally arrive, but will give way to a low. And an acceptance of all states of divine, as divine work with us, and a growing personal constancy in the relationship to God. Okay? And I would say, hopefully, we can sense that constancy from experience. Constancy strengthens, grows, locks in, stays, even though our mind and our experience ebbs and flows. The result of that is a greater constant being. Okay? Any comments?
Earlier, in the first page, you say that things happen when we're going towards a low and we don't understand what it's about. Why is this happening? There's no reason for it. What's the purpose of this?
Which is the first page? You mean this?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
And explanation, when you're able to take an overall view like you're doing now on the whole process, you can see the meaning of it. Would that be correct? But we all need to go through these
highs and lows. Sense, detect, realize meanings in being led away from understanding and closeness to the Lord. You will come to see more reason for the need for that fluctuation as you confirm, or reinforce, or recommit, whatever word you use, Philip, when you come back. You will see the meaning of awayness. But first you'll probably say, oh, bugger it. You know? Where's it gone? Where's it gone? If you look at any novel, the novel always has a V shape. Okay? The V is boy-girl fall in love. Boy-girl experience conflict. Boy-girl work to get it right again. Okay? And while it's in a Mills and Boone, it's also in the overall pattern of our experience of life. To lose, to have, to lose, your choice, which one do you want? Where is your work going to be? To cut your losses or to get back to what you first saw and felt? And that's the pattern. That's one of the reasons for this variation of state.
Can you say a little bit more about the realisation that your state has not in fact changed?
Okay. Again, I would say words. It has changed in the sense of when you make this reaffirmation, you come back, but you don't come back, you come back. It's spiral. Okay? It's spiral, round and round and up, but it's spiral. So your state has changed, but your base relationship with the divine has not changed and has not been damaged, but has been enriched by the loss.
It's interesting. It's an interesting way of a grasp, because I've often, people that you work with, that kind of when they fall into a trough. I mean, the immediate thing is that God has left me. However, they work with that.
Yeah.
And then when we worked through. The story, where Pharaoh is, Moses comes to Pharaoh and says, let my people go. And Pharaoh says, yeah, okay. And then Moses goes off and Pharaoh goes, damned if I'm going to let them go. And then this plague comes or whatever it happens to be. And so you get a fluctuation kind of situation happening. But the thing that, what that's about is that we look at that and we think things are getting worse. In actual fact, the things in terms of the proprium are already as bad as they can get, what the fluctuations is a realization of what the proprium is without the Lord.
Yes.
And the coming back is realizing what the Lord is. So there's no, what's happening is that, in a sense that, you know, because God is fully loving, like that never changes.
That's right.
So there's a constant. What changes is our belief in the appearances of what's going on, and it gives the appearance of this kind of fluctuation.
It's a loosening of our hold on the way we interpret what is important to us. So it's that sort of, again, it's hard to put it into words. It's the work, it's providence, it's the Lord's work in loosening our resistance and grip on insisting that, you know, unless I'm in a good place, which is, you know, me and my program, life is actually no good. And the Lord has to break that down and loosen our grip on it. The plagues is a good example of that. Repeat, repeat, and developing in intensity situation.
Kirk. From the science of the soul, you know, I told you that, science of the soul.
Yeah, go.
That's absolute, but that is, that's life.
Yep.
That's absolutely life. And it would be said that life is all about understanding, gaining knowledge. And it's like in anything, you've got to go into an area that you don't know, and you're in the trough until you know. And then you pass that test, if you like, you go on to the next one. You go into an area you don't know, and you learn about it.
Yep.
Once you've got it, you're on the top again. You go into the next area. If you didn't keep going into unknown areas, you would learn nothing new. You wouldn't grow spiritually, psychologically, and understanding. So it's just the process.
Nothing would intensify.
And the flat area in science of the soul would be, you're refusing to learn the lesson, or you're stuck in chaos, and you'll eventually get disease, either psychological or physical disease on the flat.
Okay.
You're just refusing,
you're stuck there.
You won't open your mind. So I heard you say all this today. And you won't open your mind again.
One thing I would urge on you not to fall into, notice how I put that, try not to fall into, as we all do, is saying that Julian said it's important that we go into a trough. So the dark night of the soul, suffering, must be a virtue. Therefore, the more I suffer, the more it's happening. Watch that one, because it's got a grain of truth in it, but it's actually being overstated to make suffering, which the Lord never wants us to do, but allows evil spirits or whatever to actually infest us. At times, suffering is a purposeful part of the whole process of regeneration, but don't make it into a virtue. And also remember that in the Lord's Prayer it says, lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. And the idea in that, which has been analyzed to death with commas, lead us, comma, not into temptation, comma, but deliver us from evil. Okay? No, I don't agree with that. Lead us not into temptation. That's what I find happening. But I don't want you to lead me into temptation. I want you to deliver me from evil. Take me out of it. Okay? It may have its course. It may stay, it may do what it does, but deliver me out of that. And the thing is, like I said earlier, if you have a high, in whatever shape or form that takes, fall in love, and you read the word and then somebody comes alive, or you feel that you've actually got a sense of your place in life, and you're on this high, you will quite soon afterwards feel and find that it has gone. As if following the Lord leads the Lord to do the dirty on you and take it away. Ha ha. No, he's not. He is bending and processing the whole thing. Okay? So don't get the wrong idea about the Lord playing games with you either. Cool.
I was just going to say that with the suffering bit, it's actually us holding fast onto our own experience as if it was reality. So it's a bit like, one of my kids don't like to brush their teeth, and they're going to delay the inevitable because they're going to brush their teeth. But how much effort? They're going to fight it.
Yes.
Eventually they're still going to brush their teeth, and it's the same with our life. Is that we're going to go through it because we have to end up,
yes,
ultimately on what the Lord is sort of pushing it. And with the cross, a couple of things I want to say there. One is, I see like little trailers of movies, of tasters, and there's two things at the highs. One is little tasters, so this is what you're going to get. And then you get renewed energy. And you need motivation, because without motivation, you're not moving. Without moving, you stay stagnant. There is no stagnancy. Stagnancy doesn't mean there's no existence. But we also, at one of the highs, is the experience of the change that you have, so you can taste the results of that change in perception. So you then get renewed motivation for why you're actually on this path.
That, I've just come in there, is the difference between starting from a high and finding a low, and starting from a low.
Yeah.
And coming onto a high of realizing what the low has done for you.
Yeah.
You see? Yeah. Okay. So they're different, but they're in this never ending process.
But the frequency is dependent on our own ability and readiness to deal with it.
Yeah. The what is?
Frequency. Yes. What is the amplitude? Yes, that's the word I was actually looking for, not the frequency. Well, both, I'd say.
Yeah. Obviously, it's also sort of three dimensional. Because this is us going up and down, but the Lord is in playing this way.
I want to keep the diagram, Ross.
Sorry, I'm seeing amplitude in both directions.
Simple and not going to over complexity of wheels with it, because I think it's important that we try and lock in and work with this basic pattern. But no doubt you're right, because we cannot adequately tabulate ultimate truth in a two-dimensional or three-dimensional way, you see.
So a little sad part, Swedenborg said, in Temptation, in the book Temptation, I think it's sad anyway, he says, today, in fact, 50 years ago, that it was hard for the Lord ever to give people the temptations they needed to overcome, because they're so spiritually weak, we, in the world today, would be 10 times worse. Spiritual weeks are not able to remember that passage.
It's ringing bells. Temptation, the level and degree and length of temptation is sort of beyond us, in the sense of all that we've been talking about earlier on this afternoon, particularly in the Divine Love and Wisdom section, where the degree of a temptation. Okay, and the point that the Lord will not take us into a deeper temptation than we can actually cope with and make a decision about to end that temptation. So we are not, I mean, I don't want to go into a discussion about suicide and all that area. That's not really what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the degree of temptation, and the Lord may very well monitor the, you know, the percentage of temptation for us, because otherwise it could break us, sort of thing. That's what I think you're saying. The other thing is, when we're in a temptation, we just do not know how long that will last. It will stay its course until it has brought us to our knees and made us humble before our God, sort of thing. You see? Not grovel. If we understand it from a spiritual, spiritual realization, we know that our humility is essential for us. We're not brought to our knees to squirm, because that would be totally against what the Lord wants for us. Not to squirm, but to learn. Okay, it's a, you know, it's an interesting area. What do you got on the sheet? Five things to begin with. This word state that came up earlier on today, and I said more of that this afternoon. What do we mean by state? Swedenborg uses state perhaps more than any other term, and says it's not time and space, it's state. It's not comings and goings, it's state. So what do we mean by state? State, scientifically, if I'm right, is the condition of something as it now is. Okay? The condition that something now is its state. Okay? Now, if you apply that spiritually, it's helpful, because we are actually, whether we know that or not, whether the appearance is otherwise, we are actually in a certain state. And one of the things that comes out of this endless fluctuation is that the Lord actually is always building on that state. He doesn't say, away with that state, you want that, Julian, you want that one instead. He's actually constructing and building the state. So all states that we go through, all states we go through, may feel left behind by us, but they're not. They're always accumulated and ever present in us. So if you have, if you think about that, if you have an insight about, you know, everybody's place in the whole scheme of things, you go, wow. The very fact that you've had that thought becomes a state factor for you. Okay? You have a perfect memory. And you also have a perfect forgettery, which is actually quite a mercy. You don't have to actually think, oh, that's the 10,000,001 thing I've been thinking of. No, the Lord takes it away from us, but it's still there. It goes dormant. But it can be brought back, and it's all part of the arsenal of making you more and more the person you are. So every state can return back.
Can't help but talk. To me, states is absolutely, utterly, it's the name of the game. The Sabbath represents, in my understanding, the holy, divine, pure state of the Lord, which we're supposed to be heading towards. And the 6 days of creation are representing the climb in our upward consciousness towards that state. And when he talks, when the Bible talks about joy and peace and harmony, this is the, like, the divine state that we're trying to head towards. Now, we've got to, like, learn, like I said, we're going through, we're going to experience jealousy, that's not a nice state. We're going to experience anger, not a nice state. Yeah.
hopefully overcome our anger, hopefully overcome our jealousies and all the negative states he gives us, and move in to these beautiful states. And to me, what everybody in every action that everybody on this planet wants is to be healthy, happy, wealthy and wise. They're all their states. And people are taking drugs because they can't get these states naturally, so they're trying synthetically to give them that state for that short period of time.
Yes.
And then pay the price.
Yes.
All the drugs do in terms of greater grafts and all the rest of it. We say we're at sixes and sevens.
I'm at sixes and sevens.
Which has that nice connection with, you know, 6 days of labour and the seventh day of rest. You know, it's as if you're saying, when you say I'm all at sixes and sevens, we say I'm all at sea. But I mean, sixes and sevens is better because it actually is consciously remembering that, you know, I'm all over the shop at the moment. But I know when I wasn't. So I'm in the six and I'm in the seven. So, you know, there's a kind of, you know, awareness factor. So that's this state. And when you come across a reference to state in Swedenborg, of which there are tens of thousands, try not to gloss over them as if, oh, yes, that's state, isn't it? And never really say, what are we talking about when we're talking about state? It's the full reality of what an individual person is actually now in, is that state. So angel states change, angel states are represented by progressions and so on, and by other things in this sort of representative afterlife situation. There's all to do with these changing states. What I would like to do is just pick out, one or two of the quotes. You've got a definition at the bottom of the second page. The state as something defined. Apocalypse Explained 16 simply says, state means a state of affection and its derived thought. Okay? Now, affection affects us. That's why it's called affection. It affects us. It doesn't titillate us. It doesn't leave us sort of wondering. It actually affects us and demands a response from us. Okay? So, it's the, I feel it's actually the key spiritual word as far as we're concerned. Affection. Because you draw towards an affection. Okay? Because it affected you.
Now, this is translated from Latin, of course. But, I mean, to me, the word today in contemporary language would be feeling. I mean, affection's...
No, I don't accept that, Kirk. I think feeling is actually a construct. I have feelings.
Okay? Feeling, you know, or feeling is having a response to the word affection more. People don't use the word much unless they're talking about partner affection in today's language.
And so we've lost a valuable term.
Exactly.
But affection has motion and magnetism in it. Okay? Pause you. And you've got other state definitions from Swedenborg there. The last one, no one state is ever like another to all eternity. Now, I'm going to zip through these, but there's one that I want to read, which I think is a beauty in a moment. First of all, the area that states remain with us after death. You know, in the near-death experiences and in sort of afterlife considerations generally, my whole life flashed before me. I look at that and I think, you know, you're dying. You know, off the cliff, and you're dying. dying, and you think, ah! And suddenly, you know, the first day I went to school, my first kiss, no, that's absolute rubbish. My whole life does not flash before me in that way. It flashes before me instantly in a appraisal of life. Okay? That's what I think it means. It's there kinetically, no, potentially. It's built up and it just shows in that sense in the review after death, which brings you towards your judging of yourself in the light of truth. You see. All states are preserved, top one. All states are preserved so that not the least of them is lost. Every state not only remains, but also returns, exactly as they have been in the world. And any states of evil and falsity are tempered by the Lord by means of good states. That's important. It's not just that you've got some bad states and some good states, but your whole view and relationship with all your states is that the good states are actually healing, like white blood corpuscles, healing the effect of what bad states were bad at that time, but now no longer need to be seen as bad, if you follow me. Okay? So, are tempered by the Lord by means of good states. Good can affect our understanding of evil or bad and tempering. In the other life, I'm not going to read all these. In the other life, anyone can be easily be let into any state of life in which he has had here, for these all remain. And the next but one, in the next life, a person enters into new states. Okay? New states. So it's a growth of continuation, newness. Not only a return back, but a continual movement into what is new. Okay? Did you want to say something, Philip?
No, just one...
I can't afford time to hang around. That's the only thing.
Okay. The evil states are retained because if they're not there, we're somebody else.
Yes, that's right. That's well put. We are... debunking them, okay? And they have to be part of our whole appraisal of being Julian, you know? And they may largely be dormant, but they can be brought back and seen and put down again and help us at that time. So every state is retained.
As a use.
Okay? States imaged, I think most of us will know about this. Pick one out. The last but one. When spirits have a state of evening or of night, they are compelled during that state to think about the false ideas being introduced. When they pass through a state of morning or noon, they are in a state of freedom and can think about the things that they love. Okay? So that's an imaging of changing states. And many others are talked about. In fact, the whole pictorial description of life as it substantially is in the spiritual world. And when Swinburne talks about parks and gardens and carriages drawn by horses, from the 17th century men. What about Porsches? What about motorbikes? Okay, but the whole point of any representation in the spiritual world is a projection from your state so that you can and others can see how it truly is in representative form. Not just a sort of wander through. Changes of state. Load on this. Pick a couple out only. Turn over the page. Third number down. Blunt. No one can keenly perceive what is good unless it has been in an opposite state and have something to really conceptualise the goodness of that good by comparison. I know when I wasn't in it, sort of thing.
Well, because we can't know the law, because we can't describe, we can't perceive, we can't perceive what is not.
Yes.
So therefore we can only experience what is not the law to be able to understand what is.
Yes, yes. Khalil Gibran said, I have learned tolerance from the intolerant. I have learned wisdom from the foolish. I have learned love from the unloving. And it's that sort of process. The Catholics call it the via negativa.
Mm.
And it came up earlier with, we can only know the divine by what it isn't. Which is a bit quirky, but it's, you know,
exactly.
It's the process. The last one, angels pass through a continual succession of states by which they are being perfected. Okay? Key word. Angels pass through a continual succession of states by which they are being perfected. These variations come from the interiors of the angels themselves, because like men, they desire to be in their internal life at one time and in their external life at another. You know, linked with the idea of use or society or love of others. You get this wish to be in an external state of doing and so on, so that you can come back and be in a state of reflective being after it. Morning, noon, evening.
Can we get to the quote?
Yes. Okay. Okay, I won't quote any more apart from this glorious one. Effects of changes of state. Now, have a look at the middle of the page where it says, as a heading, the appearance of a state as the opposite to the reality of it. The appearance of a state, the appearance of a state as opposite to the true reality of it. Okay? We can misinterpret. We can get it the wrong way in our head about what's actually going on. Here we are, last thing. The fact that people are distant from one another, this isn't the spiritual world, this is sort of here, inner life. The fact that people are distant from one another makes no difference at all. Even though many thousands of miles separate them, they can still be present in one community. Nor, when people are together in the same place, does it make any difference. They are still all distinct and separate, according to the nature of their life and their states, each one possibly in a different community from the rest. When people who are many thousands of miles apart are seen with the eye of internal sense, they are so close as to be able to touch one another. So if a number of people existed on Earth whose internal sight was open, they would be able to be together and talk together, even though one was in India and another in Europe.
Go on, telephone.
True community. Do not interpret communities in heaven spatially. Interpret them networkingly. Okay, I'm going to leave it there.
Thanks. We have someone coming in.